It is The Brink coming to you today for another brilliant podcast episode, sneaking in the monthly appearance once again, stretching it to the very limit on the 31st. Happy Easter. If you celebrate it, you don't, then happy Easter as well, because it's Easter and that's what matters. Short, sharp show for you once again today. Got a couple of guests appearing on to chat about a variety of different things and just generally bringing some traditions back in terms of Sam's appearance from the recent Grand Prix last weekend in Melbourne. And also during the week, got to say, it's been a pretty big week for Tasmania in the last, well, not only just week, the last couple of weeks. We've had the Tassie Devils formally introduced as our AFL team. The Jack Jumpers, at least at the time of recording this, are potentially one game away from winning the NBL. When I say that, of course, we are releasing this Sunday morning on Game 5 day. We are recording this the morning after narrowly missed out on claiming that first championship, so big deal there. The Tassie State Cricket Team lost the Sheffield Shield final, so another big deal there when it comes to making the final. So it was a little show that we always punched above, putting Tassie on the map. I think Tassie's done pretty well in the last couple of weeks to try and do that. So a lot of attention being on their state election, of course, last week as well. So plenty to keep the eyes on Tasmania. But you'll hear Sam talk a little bit about his thoughts on the Devils, which it's done in very Sam fashion, let's just put it that way. And let's just see how all that plays out. I don't want to tease it too much because then you won't bother listening, will you? So I'm going to shut up with the intro. You're going to hear from Sam and another very special guest here on the latest edition of The Brink. In 2023, Oscar Piastri had the most successful rookie Formula One season since Lewis Hamilton in 2007. And a great new book is out detailing that amazing rookie season. Oscar Piastri, The Rookie, written by the esteemed Andrew Van Leeuwen, and a fantastic insight into just what not only it makes Piastri tick when it comes to his skills and everything out on the track, but just everything that went about in his rookie season. And I'm thrilled to be able to join today by Andrew to learn a little bit more about this book and talk a little bit about Oscar Piastri. Andrew, first of all, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on the show today.
Thanks, Ben. It's great to be here.
I love this book. Couldn't put it down. I mean, I'm a Formula One nut, so anything Formula One I'm going to read basically from start to finish in pretty quick succession. But obviously with our own Oscar having a pretty successful year, a great way to read a little bit about that. I'd love to learn how the idea of this book sort of came about and what made you want to write a great book on his first ever season.
Well, the idea actually came from Penguin Random House, to be honest. I worked with them on the Toby Price autobiography a couple of years ago. That was the first book that I'd actually written. And we struck up a fairly good working relationship and sort of came to the agreement that, you know, let's work towards finding another project to do together in the motor racing or the motorsport world. We sort of spitballed a few ideas and eventually Brandon Vanover, my publisher there, sort of came up with this odd idea that, hey, F1's massive right now. We have an Aussie, you know, who's, you know, you could write a book about what happened before he'd even driven a Formula or raced a Formula One car for the first time with all the contract stuff that came up. There was just so much drama built about it that, you know, there was scope for it to be a great book regardless of sort of how his rookie season actually played out. So it just made a lot of sense to do that. Obviously, I've got the contacts within the F1 paddock to be able to get hold of the, you know, the audio from the media sessions and the insight that you need to be able to sort of fill the gaps from, you know, along with what you sort of shows up on TV and this sort of stuff, and all the ingredients were sort of there to make a book. So obviously, you know, I'm sure we're going to touch on the fact it turned into a fantastic season for Oscar, but obviously we had to make the decision that we were going to do this long before the season got underway. So there was a little bit of a roll of the dice there, but we just figured that it's such an amazing story of just how he got to Formula One that, you know, there was going to be plenty of interest there.
So this was a sort of a process throughout 2023 where you're obviously closely monitoring Oscar's performance and then kind of almost, I guess, do you write sort of a chapter per round essentially and kind of go with a flow across the season like that?
Yeah, basically. That's effectively how it happened. It wasn't always write it directly afterwards. And probably, you know, I'm still fairly new to the book world. This was only my second book and the first one that I've kind of done in this style where I'm not just directly retelling somebody's story in their own voice. So, you know, it's a bit like you've got to learn to manage your workload. I have a day job as well as a journalist. So I probably fell a little bit behind at some point, and towards the end of the year sort of went, I wish I'd done a little bit more. But one of the real benefits of that happening is that the story arc had sort of started to develop a lot more. So, you know, obviously at the start of the season, they were struggling with that car a little bit. You know, he scored his first points at Albert Park. There was just this stretch of fairly mediocre results that, you know, if I'd been riding round by round, you might have sort of gone, well, you know, maybe this is as good as it's going to get. But obviously, once the story evolved and we realized that the upgrades worked so well on that car and Oscar really started to make the most out of those upgrades and all that sort of stuff, being able to reflect on the season before I sort of wrote, you know, covered off everything, actually helped, you know, properly build the context of how big that turnaround was, you know, and how much they were actually struggling and they were below the expectations that they'd set for themselves. So I think that the timeline actually worked really well for the story, and, you know, just how amazing that it was such, you know, like you'd struggle to write a book if you made it up about, you know, where they started the season and where they ended that season. I mean, Oscar winning a sprint race. I know it's not a Grand Prix, but I mean, what a turnaround when, you know, they were double DNFing in Bahrain and, you know, the car seemed slow and unreliable. So that's kind of how the process played out.
And you touched on obviously the whole contract saga and everything that came in 2022. I mean, I commend you for keeping that really limited to a chapter. I mean, how tempting was that to kind of make that sort of into more of a thing in the book?
Look, I think that there was just so many interesting parts of that. But the one big and important part to tell was obviously at the time it was such a PR hit for Oscar, you know, because and for McLaren, because it really on the surface it looked like, you know, McLaren had done the dirty on Dan Ricciardo. They'd done the dirty on Alpine by pinching their boy Oscar. Oscar had done the dirty on Alpine by abandoning the team that had given him so much and supported him so much in the junior formula. So it was just, I think the goal there was to really tell in the most concise and clear way that that's absolutely not what happened, you know. And those details came out when the details from the contract recognition board hearing came out. It was clear that that is not what happened. And what actually happened was that Alpine wouldn't make the commitment that the Piastris needed. McLaren had already gone down the path of, you know, of its divorce with Daniel Ricciardo because that relationship was not working. And McLaren came to Oscar and said, we really want you. And he said, well, that's great because I don't feel like I'm actually really wanted here. So, I think the whole goal there was just to break down exactly how that happened because, you know, Alpine very much had their say at the time and made it clear that they felt betrayed by Oscar. And, you know, the Piastri camp and McLaren really stayed quiet until the CRB findings came out. It's good to retell that story the way it should be retold, which is that, you know, there was a significant amount of fault on the side of Alpine to the fact that they lost the services of Oscar.
And of course, history will probably show now that clearly that decision ended up being a pretty smart one by Oscar and everyone involved.
Absolutely.
I mean, you touched on sort of the story almost selling itself there kind of with how that rookie season played out. But I mean, how impressed, Andrew, were you with everything that he achieved in 2023? I mean, we touched on the sprint win, two podiums, 97 points, ninth in the championship, most successful rookie campaign since Lewis Hamilton back in 2007. I mean, the numbers basically speak for themselves there.
Yeah, it's amazing, you know, and obviously everyone knows how highly rated Lando is. And we know the kind of damage that Lando inflicted on Daniel Ricciardo's career. And Daniel Ricciardo's a eight-time Grand Prix winner. So he's not a nufty. He knows what he's doing. So that was a big test for Oscar. And a lot of the question marks were, do you really want to go into Lando's team? You know, is that really where you want to go? And I think it was quite interesting. One of the points that I think it's Damon Hill that makes in the book. I spoke to a few people about Oscar before the season started, is that, you know, it's actually great to have that benchmark because you're not necessarily expected to go out and hose your teammate straight away, but you will be compared as to how competitive you can be against him. And, you know, the people in the know that Lando got all the upgrades first. You know, he obviously gets the free kicks in the team. We saw that at the Grand Prix, this year's Grand Prix, just last weekend. You know, he's the British driver and he's the more experienced driver and he's the lead driver. But Oscar is snapping at his heels and was all last year and was the guy that got the sprint win when Lando didn't. and was the guy that really pushed Lando. And that's more than what he had to do. You know, so that is what impressive. That is what is impressive, because you can win Formula 3 titles and Formula 2 titles and do all this sort of stuff, but you have to go out and perform in Formula 1. You have to do it, you know, and he did it. He looks like a Formula 1 driver. You know, there's no doubt that he has a very long, successful career ahead of him, and it's so important in that rookie season to set that up. And that's always impressive when someone can come in and within half a season just look like they've been there forever. So yeah, it's amazing what he has achieved.
It's a great point you make, that it almost feels like he's been there forever, because, you know, particularly in Melbourne this year, and sort of the way he was, seemed very chilled and relaxed. It almost just feels like he's been part of the furniture for quite some time, doesn't it? And yet this is only his second full season in the sport.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, like, he is so early in his career, and you wouldn't know it by his demeanor. He still needs to get his head around, you know, things like time management and that, because there's a lot you can learn in the junior formula, but there's a lot of unique factors that are part of Grand Prix racing that you can only learn when you go Grand Prix racing, particularly in these days of limited testing and that sort of stuff. So, you know, once upon a time, they would have taken him out to a racetrack and he would have spent days and days pounding around, you know, learning how the tyres go off, learning how to manage the tyres, this and that. They just can't do that anymore. So you're sort of learning on the fly, but he just learns so incredibly quickly. And that's why he sort of positioned himself as a genuine, recognisable star of the sport in a season and three races, you know. It's crazy.
How do you find, based on what you've done through this book and who you talk to and who you see out there, I guess, Australia's perception of Oscar Piastri? Because I ask this question because in the last 20 or so years, we've had obviously Mark Webber, who the Aussie battler, battled through everything to get there. Great debut. We all know what kind of happened through that, through the Vettel years and everything. Then we get Ricciardo, who is beloved, you know, Mr. Personable, always happy, all that kind of stuff. And then you kind of got quiet Oscar, who sort of comes on and just gets down to business, often likened to someone like an Alain Prost, you know, very professional and everything like that. I mean, it's a unique way, I think, of sort of looking at how Australians have had to deal with Formula One drivers, because he's not a Mark Webber, he's not a Daniel Ricciardo, he's his own man. But do you think that kind of affects the way Australia maybe perceives him or kind of reacts to what Oscar does out there?
I think that from personality-wise, there probably is a fair bit of Mark Webber about him. And he is managed by Mark Webber. He's spent a lot of time with Mark Webber and his partner, Anne Neal, since he's been overseas. They've been a very important part of his career. And Mark was a very important part of recognising that, you know, that Alpine weren't holding up their end of the bargain and that they needed to get out of there and sign that McLaren deal. I think the difference is, you know, you talked about Mark being a grafter and all that sort of stuff. That's exactly right. Like, Mark was a very solid Grand Prix driver, but he wasn't a great of Formula One. You know, he got there through hard work. This whole thing was Aussie grit. Like, he just ground around until he made a career out of being a Formula One driver, which is impressive in its own right. I think that, then you had Daniel, who was just full of natural talent and personality and a sponsor's dream and all that sort of stuff, which obviously led to him having a great career, even if it's been a bit rocky in the last couple of years. Then you got Oscar, who's probably more like Mark in terms of, you know, he's not over the... He's actually quite funny. If you follow some of his stuff on social media and stuff, he's very witty and very funny. But he's probably a little bit more, you know, reserved than Daniel is. But he's got... And I don't... This is not any sort of disparagement at Mark, but he's got the natural talent that Mark didn't have. He's got that, just that pure natural ability, that starting point, which is just being so incredibly quick, that, you know, it gives him the opportunity to take his career to different heights, you know, than Mark could. So, but personality wise, he's definitely a bit more, he's obviously very focused. He seems very calm. You know, when you talk to the McLaren boss, Andrea Stella, about him, he talks a lot about the fact that, you know, there's no peaks and troughs in his kind of, in his mental preparation and, you know, he keeps himself in a position to be able to perform at his best all of the time. Mm. And that's quite hard for professional athletes. And you know, we know that, you know, players of lots of any sport, their form comes and goes a lot of the time. And that's what Andrea says, that he just has this ability to just never throw the toys out the pram, never get upset if Lando's getting upgrades or if something doesn't really go his way in the race. He just keeps himself at that point where he's performing at his best. And that's so important in a sport like Formula One, where consistency is what can win you a championship.
Touching on that consistency, three rounds into the season, 2 fourths and an eighth, just 1 point ahead of Lando. We know Lando got the podium, of course, at Albert Park, but I mean, setting up a little bit of a better season potentially than last year where they were at this year. But I mean, prospects for Oscar this year, do you think podiums are to come, and can potentially he sneak that win?
Look, I think that's definitely potential. There's a potential for podiums. There's a potential for wins, absolutely. Obviously, the team is so much better placed than it was this time last season. But that potentially means that the room for improvement isn't quite as big as well, you know, because they were a fair way down the pecking order at the start of last season, and the only place they could really go was up. They certainly went up a lot further than you would predict them to do. But this time around, they're kind of locked in a battle with Mercedes as the third and fourth fastest team. Ferrari has definitely taken a step forward over the off-season. And we know that, you know, the Red Bull package is what it is. It's pretty handy as well. So, we might not see the massive rise of the team. You know, it's not like, well, they went from being the eighth fastest team to the second fastest team this year, so it should be easy from where they are now. It's still going to be very hard to run down the Ferrari and the Red Bulls and to sort of pull clear of Mercedes. So, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of battling around for the back end of the podium, for those sort of first few spots after the podium, and all of it's going to be incredibly important when it comes to the Constructors' Championship. And, you know, there's millions and millions of dollars on the line for those spots in the Constructors' Championship. So, you know, I would guess right now McLaren, they're saying, you know, they'll be targeting third in the Constructors' standings. And every good result, like on the weekend, you know, I mean, obviously a great weekend for Ferrari, but, you know, a 3-4 for McLaren, that's huge, you know. And I think that's the sort of area we're going to see that team fighting for, at least until we get into the European season and we see if anyone's brought any upgrades that have made a huge difference.
Two quick things to end it, Andrew. First one, it's been 44 years since Australia's had a Formula One world champion. Do you think Oscar is the man that is going to end up breaking this drought that we've had for so long?
I think so. Yeah, look, I think that whether he does it with McLaren or, you know, we're going to have a rule change in 2026, which can potentially shake the order up. But I think Piastri's done enough that if you were thinking, you know, he's signed up with McLaren until then, but if you were thinking about how you want to structure your team, you know, as we see the likes of Lewis Hamilton fall away, you know, how long's Max going to keep doing it for? You don't know. He's very young, but he's been in the sport for a long time. I think that Piastri is going to work his way into a race-winning car at some point in his career. And I think he has shown in the junior formula that he is consistent enough and fast enough to win a championship. So I would definitely, I'll be surprised if the guy goes his entire Formula One career and doesn't win a championship. And, you know, we've kind of, Jack Doohan sort of, there's a big question mark over whether he's kind of missed his window to get into Formula One. We might be waiting a little while for the next Aussie to come along. So there's plenty of time there for Oscar to be the next guy to win us a title. And yeah, I think it's some pretty safe money would go on the fact that he's going to do it at some point.
Did you get an opportunity to catch up with Oscar at all in Melbourne? And has he read the book? I mean, have you sort of got any feedback from him or the Piastri family? Maybe his grandma handing out all the pastry treats out there in the paddock.
I didn't see Oscar over the Grand Prix weekend. I was more on the supercars beat over the weekend and sort of just coming and going from the F1 paddock. But he does have a copy of the book. Our Speak FA F1 editor, Matt Kosh, had one in Bahrain and he saw it and said, give me a look at that, and took off with it. He knows it's out there. I haven't had any feedback, but, you know, it's obviously, you've read it. It's a fairly glowing assessment of the guy's first season and his career leading into Formula One. And obviously, I think, you know, a fairly important clarification on what happened with the whole Alpine and McLaren mess as well. So, hopefully one day he decides to read it and sort of understands that, yeah, it's a very good news story because he is a good news story.
Indeed. Perfect way to summarize that. Oscar Piastri, the rookie, of course, is available now. You can get it where all good books are sold, online and in stores. Andrew, mate, pleasure to have you on the show today and go over this book and best of luck for it all moving forward.
Thank you very much.
All right, it is a day of tradition here on the Brink as we are in Melbourne. And that means only one thing, that I get to talk to the main man, the man with a plan, the man who is not called Stan, Samuel McCrossan. Hello, Sam.
Hello, Ben. The man with a plan. I like that.
You always have a plan.
I do always have a plan. I'm pretty organised.
What's the plan today?
The plan right now, Albanese.
Oh, good call. Hey, that's better than your Bruce. We do a looky-likey competition, and he tried to sell me on a Bruce Willis who looked more like Peter Garrett. That man looked like the Prime Minister. I'll give you an 8 for that one.
Thank you, Ben. I think Albanese just saw me pointing at him, actually.
It really was Albo.
Yeah. Bigger, rounder Albo, yeah. Anyway, we were talking about...
Your plan for today.
All right, plan for today. I'm going to down this lovely large latte I'm about to receive. And then we're going out to the airport, and we've got a plane leaving at 7.
And you're going back to the great state of Tasmania, home now to the Tasmanian Devils and the nearly champion Jack Jumpers at the time of recording this. Going back to a pretty exciting state, Samuel McCrossan.
I'm not sure if it's a great state.
But you'd still like to live there. You've never left it.
No, I haven't left it.
You never would, though, would you?
I don't know. Maybe.
All right. How's life treating you? I don't think we've had you on the show in 12 months. Standard, really. But things going well in Samland?
Yeah, things are going all right. I'm just keeping on. And just doing my work and...
Wearing your suits?
Wearing my suits, raising my children.
Yep. Actually, I lied. We had you on when you were in Sydney in like, what was that, like September, October, wasn't it? So you sat in my apartment, and you'll be back again in a few months as well. So you're still a travel man. Yes, thank you very much. We are just getting coffees.
Thank you
very much. We're just getting coffees delivered, and we thought we'd keep that in because it's Melbourne, right? And you need to deliver coffee to recording. So what have you ordered, Sam?
I've ordered a large flat white.
I've ordered a small, skinny cappuccino, which, again, the standard Melbourne way, eating in an alley, and you're putting your sugar in there right now. You're very particular about your half sugar there. That's a bit of your granulated brown sugar.
I am, I'm pretty scientific about it. So what would you say, that's half a sugar?
I'd say that's about that, yes.
That's kind of a big teaspoon, isn't it?
It is quite a big teaspoon.
I might put a fraction more on. I reckon I need about another 300 grains on there.
All right, 300 grains, very particular. I actually wanted to ask you, I brought it up. Tasmanian Devils, the AFL team. It's official now. What do you think of the logo? What do you think of the Guernsey? And did you become an inaugural member, Samuel McCrossan?
No, I didn't become an inaugural member. I'm determined.
Yet?
No.
You're not going to do it?
Nah.
I thought you said you were going to be switching to Tassie because you're trying to say that I'm going to get rid of Carlton and you're like, I'm going to do, you know, get rid of your beloved Pussycats. Why wouldn't you become an inaugural member?
No, I'm not interested. I think, Ben, I was thinking yesterday, I might be the only Tasmanian because you might know, but down there in Tassie, there's lots of people with... Yes Team, Yes Stadium slogan stickers on there.
I'm one of them.
And then you've got people with the No Stadium stickers. I think I might be the only people that's No Team, Yes Stadium.
You just want them to build a stadium and just be like, we've built a stadium. And then what do you use it for? Nothing. Yeah. For the North Hobart Demons.
Yeah, because I believe that it's the bad guys that are the opponents of the stadium who don't want the stadium. I think it'd be a dreadful shame if yet another idea that Tasmania has doesn't happen. So we've got a far-left green crowd that want to shut everything down. So I'm supportive of the stadium for that reason. However, I'm not supportive of the team because I don't think we necessarily need a team.
Oh, hang on a minute. Why do we not need a team? This is us. This is Tassie. We should have always had a team in this competition.
Because I'm concerned that we're in a spiritual crisis, Ben. I don't think we need another...
You just don't want to get rid of your pussycats.
I don't think we need more bread and circuses.
You used to be a Fitzroy supporter, if I'm not mistaken, right? So you lost your team. So I've got to say this. You've changed teams in your lifetime.
I have, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So well, you didn't need to change teams because Fitzroy didn't disappear. They just slightly changed into something different. If you were a true supporter, you'd be a Brisbane Lions supporter right now. So why did you change to Geelong? And if you've done it once, why can't you do it again?
Look, I have to pick you up on something there, Ben. It's not... I didn't exactly change teams. I changed from being a Fitzroy supporter. I think I picked that team because I liked the colours and... For whatever reason, when I was very small, I picked out the Lions, the Fitzroy Lions. However, I changed from Fitzroy to Gary Ablett. I was a Gary Ablett supporter.
Okay, I see that, but you still changed teams, though. You still changed. I know you went from a team to a person, but you still wore different colours. I mean, you didn't then change to Gold Coast when he went to the Gold Coast, did you?
No,
that was his son we're talking about now, but it's still an Ablett. So you didn't change teams then. And you could have gone for Hawthorn because Gary Ablett used to play for Hawthorn.
Yeah, well, that's true. But no, if Tassie does get a team, I'll go for Tassie over Geelong. That's no problem. But I oppose the team on philosophical and theological grounds, Ben.
You're an interesting man of many convictions, Samuel McCrossan. The Grand Prix, though, 2024, an amazing weekend where we saw Ferrari get a beautiful 1-2.
Yeah.
I know you don't like Ferrari, but did you have an enjoyable weekend? And what did you think of the race?
Well, actually, I don't mind Ferrari too much.
I'll say that again. Say that loudly.
Look, I don't mind Ferrari too much. I think
it's coming around. Get around it.
Red Bull is my team, and if I had a second team, I suppose it would be the Visa Cash App RB team.
Not Steak Kick Sauber.
No. Well, again, looking at the sport on philosophical and theological grounds, Ben, I do oppose teams that get ideologically possessed easily, such as the Mercedes team. Ferrari have dabbled in it, but they're not too bad. That's why
they're Italians. They're always, yeah.
Yeah, a bit like the Austrians. They're a bit more mature than all the other...
And we know Austria has never produced anything bad.
And then... McLaren, they're bad, they're bad. Alpine, I think they might be the worst a lot. Aston Martin, they're bad. Mercedes are bad.
What about Haas?
No, they're not too bad.
Williams.
They're mid-range. They're not real crash hard.
Well, they do crash a lot, but then they don't have a spare chassis, so...
Sauber, they're a bit iffy.
Kick Sauber,
they're a bit iffy.
Yeah. I've got a can of deodorant in my room right now, which looks like the Kick Sauber. It's black with the highlights of fluoro green. You know what that team reminds you of? You know when you get like an F1 game now and you can create your own team and you've just got your base like model, like a couple of bits of flecks of colour, and then all the team personnel in the pits are wearing like really fake looking uniforms. Yeah. That's what they look like. They just look like the base team in F1 2023.
You know what? I've been thinking that. You're right. Good call.
Thank
good
you. Call. Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
Steven Spielberg.
Good call. No, I'll pay that one. I think so. Ben's just seen someone that looks like Steven Spielberg. I think it's. I'll give you an 8 for that.
Oh, good. Oh, good call on your call.
Only if you reconsider my Bruce Willis.
I'll maybe give you an extra half a percentage point.
So what am I up to? 7.
6.5.
Short-changed, I think. But anyway, so getting back to Ferrari, you know what, they're up there for me.
I like that, you've come around, just like my man Fernando. We're good mates, Fernando and I now.
They're not completely wholesome, but that's up there.
Charles or Carlos, who would you rather have a coffee with in a Melbourne alley?
Carlos.
Yeah,
the smooth operator. Charles Leclerc, he's okay.
I like Charles. Charles the type of guy you'd go to a shop and you'd buy your fancy suit with. Like, you know, at Meyer, whereas Carlos, you could do the same, but then you'd easily have a coffee with Carlos and he'd go and kick a footy with him.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Charles is, well, he's French, isn't he?
Well, Monegasque.
No, he's French.
Basically French.
Yeah. I'm not too keen on the French.
Yeah, cheese sniffing surrender monkeys.
Yeah, I just don't like, I don't like the French. They're arrogant. I don't like arrogance.
What about your man Fernando?
I do like Fernando. Yeah.
Anything else you want to report on, Sam? Because I'd like to enjoy my coffee, so I might... But it's good to catch up. You're going to be on this show again in a couple of months when you're staying in my apartment, going to the footy, yeah. NRL. We'll have a nice time in Sydney. Nice manly time.
Yes, yeah. It's going to be fun, and I will be sure to say some more controversial things in June.
Can you contact the Sarge to make sure he comes on the plane with you?
we might be able to organise something. I believe he lives in Sydney these days.
Oh, bloody hell. He's gone up in the world. Western Sydney?
Yes. Yes, indeed. Parramatta.
He seems like a Parramatta man. Sam, thank you. It's a pleasure. And enjoy your latte.
Oh, well, very good. Thank you very much for having me, Ben.
Time to bring this bad boy home. One thing I will mention, the Brink Unleashed 12 NYC officially out now. If you haven't seen it, published on all our social media channels, of course, head to our YouTube channel, search for The Brink Unleashed 12. You'll find it, as well as on our Facebook and Twitter pages if you wish to see the latest edition of The Brink Unleashed. Been nearly 6 years since we've done a Brink Unleashed film, and we're bringing one back to you. And there'll be another two this year as well. So stay tuned for that. Very exciting time. If you're one of the two people who ever gave two shits about the Brink Unleashed films. So you're in for a big ride this year. But I assume if you're listening to this, you do give a shit. So that's how it works. And we'll also be hopefully this year doing our long-awaited podcast series on audio commentaries of all the previous Brink Unleashed films. Something that we've always looked at doing. And we might finally be able to do that for you this year. So again, stay tuned to all of our channels and you will see how that plays out. Thanks again to Andrew for his time on the show. To Sam, we'll speak to him no doubt in a few months' time as well when he is in Sydney. Thanks everyone for tuning in as per usual. Like, subscribe, do all the regular things you do with this podcast. And until we next speak again at some point soon, keep sucking those oranges, Hobart, and good night.